The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. This is a new era of Red Sox baseball. Through every twist and turn, every major development, we are all on this journey together. This is going to be the most honest Sox podcast you're going to hear. No BS, just the truth. I'm your host, Charlie Smith, coming to you from sunny Los Angeles. You can find me on Twitter/X at Smith_MLB. My other hosts for this episode are Chris Felico coming to us from Warwick, New York, and Terry Cushman coming to us from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Chris, how are you doing? Where can the fans find you?
Doing great, Charlie, especially after that sweep. And you can find me on Twitter X at Saved by Grace. It's SavedBuy Grace.
Love it. And Terry, how are you doing? Obviously, pretty good spirits, I'm sure. But where can the fans find you?
I can be found at Cushman MLB. Terry Talks Sox on Facebook, and then the podcast in general can be found on Instagram, TikTok, and just about everywhere. Red Sox have won 5 games in a row. We are half a game back from the division leading New York Yankees. The Red Sox also have the 4th best record in the American League. Quite the turnaround from when we left Texas.
Absolutely unreal when you outscore your opponents 36-20. I mean, they dropped an 18 bomb in game 3 this evening. I mean, just no words for that. Absolutely insane. I mean, at one point we had scored more runs today than they had scored in the series with 18. That's just insanity. But Terry, you already talked about the fact that we've improved now 5 straight games. We're 6-4, second place in the AL East, just half a game back behind the Yankees. Why don't you lead us off with your stud for this series?
All right. So let me preface this by saying they're not in order of importance, but by far, well, maybe I shouldn't say by far, but the best starting pitcher for the series was Hunter Dobbins. And in the war room last night, I'm like, who's going to start? Who do we have? We know Newcomb is going in game 1 of the doubleheader. And I'm thinking, initially we thought possibly Fulmer. I thought Newcomb could be DFA'd. Maybe it was already planned for them to DFA him after the first game to get Fulmer onto the 40 man so he can pitch that game. But as it turned out, he had already pitched yesterday. So the stats weren't updated. That's why I wasn't seeing anything. Hunter Dobbins, I found, would be pitching on normal rest. But I'm like, are they really going to do that? He only lasted in his last minor league start. That was on April 1st. He only lasted 3 2/3 innings, gave up 5 runs. So I'm like, that's kind of ugly. I don't know. Are they going to call him up? Is it just going to be a spot start? It did end up being Dobbins, and it wasn't the greatest start. I mean, he gave up 8 hits, constantly pitching around traffic on the bases, but he got us through it. Went 5 full innings, only gave up 2 earned runs, struck out 5, walked 2. So good enough. And coming into this game, you already knew you weren't going to have Chapman because he closed out game 1. You weren't going to have Slayton. He pitched the 7th or 8th inning of game 1. So your bullpen, some of your best relievers are gone, and you've got a Cardinals lineup here that was white hot coming into the start. And I thought he pulled it together, walked the tightrope, got it done. Walker Buehler did not look good on in the home opener on Friday. And Sean Newcomb didn't look terrible, but you know, that game, I don't know. He didn't have the same run support that Dobbins had, but my expectations were the lowest for Dobbins, and it was a good debut. His family was there. They didn't have much time to get to the park. They basically pulled an all-nighter traveling from West Texas to Fenway Park, and I'm sure it's a night they'll never forget.
Absolutely. Chris, anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, as far as Dobbins, I thought he was phenomenal, especially going into the fact that we had the two games. Really wanted the sweep. I thought he pitched well. As far as my stud, I went with Abreu. I was really going between Abreu and Bregman, and I give the tiebreaker to Abreu because they both had six hits in the series. I know Bregman had seven RBIs and Abreu only had six, but his six RBIs were a lot more impactful throughout the series. Like, I think about game one. That game kind of got close. It became 6-5 game, and he kind of like got us a little bit of a cushion, making it 7-5 at that point. Then obviously he had the walk off today, in extra innings, which was phenomenal. And then today we were down 1-0 in the blink of an eye in the first inning. He ties it back up 1-0 and then kind of breaks the game open when it was 4-1, makes it 6-1. So I just thought he had more meaningful at bats in this series. So I'm going with Abreu.
Yeah, no, I hear it really quickly. I actually was similar to what Terry was talking about, just because I wanted to briefly talk about him. Last year, when you look at his numbers for AA and AAA, in AAA, didn't do that bad. Granted, it was a really small sample size. Impressed with the fact that he was able to get a strikeout and inning on the average. So I think that's, you know, something to look forward to. Our starting pitching really was only able to survive and get those wins because the offense just absolutely went postal. I mean, it's when you drop over 30 runs in three games, you've more than exceeded expectations. You're on another stratosphere. So really nice to see that. And Chris, to your point, I actually agree with you on Willy Abreu. This guy was so consistently, you know, being clutch in each game. It wasn't, you know, to your point with Bregman, who had six RBIs in one game, while he led the team in RBIs for the series, Willy Abreu was able to impact each game. Bregman didn't really do anything in one of the games. Willy Abreu did everything possible to be relevant in all three games. And I mean, it's a testament to what he's done so far. Even right now, we've had 10 games. I know it's, you know, a very, very small sample size, but Willy Abreu is hitting .483. His slugging is almost .900. The guy's absolutely torching it. So people can say whatever they want to say. He's leading the team in RBIs. Bregman had, again, six today in the third game. That puts him up to 10. Abreu had three. That puts him up to 12. So already, I mean, I don't think anybody, guns to our heads, would have thought that Willy Abreu would be leading the team in batting average or RBIs this early on in the season. So credit to both of them. Terry, anything you wanted to add about Abreu?
Tons. You go back to game two and we're down 4-2 in the ninth and all hell breaks loose when the Red Sox come up, you know, tons of walks, couple key hits there. One of them from Romy Gonzalez, and Jaron Duran came up right before Abreu, and Duran hadn't been good all game. He was 0-5. Struck out a couple of times, and I'm like, I just don't want to see a double play here. And oh, actually, I'm getting my innings mixed up. That was the ninth inning. My bad. Who struck out before? Let's see, Abreu. I don't know if it was Campbell or Story, but Abreu came up. My bad. Abreu came up and I think the bases were loaded and I knew the game was about to be over. You could just feel it. You knew the walk-off was going to happen. He had the steadiest at bat, and we've gotten to know Abreu by now. He's a physically strong guy in the batter's box. He can muscle that ball. He's got tons of exit velocity and all the momentum in the world. I mean, 6-12, 12 on the series. He was 3-for-5 in the first game with a home run. Got a key RBI hit in the middle game today. Continued after that game, was 2-for-6 with 3 ribbies. But getting back to that middle game, I just knew the game was going to end. I just knew it. And he ripped one right off the monster. Alex Bregman came home, and it was a big hit, because we didn't know what Hunter Dobbins was going to do in game 3. And when we were still down in the ninth, the inning where all broke loose, I'm thinking, man, we just blew this game. One of our best relievers got used. We're going to lose game 3 with the rookie. And we're going to be down. We're going to be 2 games under 500 again. That's where I was at. That at the during the ninth inning, I'm like, this is so bad. And, you know, and then we tied it. And, you know, Abreu was able to drive in Bregman in the 10th inning. But, man, and another thing, too. Every single one of us put him in trade packages all winter.
Yeah, we did.
We were trying to get a pitcher from the Mariners, and we were like, well, let's put Bray. Bray was always the guy. You weren't trading Duran. You weren't trading Anthony. Rafael is on a long-term deal.
Yeah.
Everybody was putting a Bray in packages. And this is not sustainable. He will cool off. But we still don't know where the ceiling is for him. And I was looking, I was trying to see if there were any mock trade packages over the winter. And all I was seeing was trade packages in the last 48 hours. There's Atlanta writers trying to give us, I forget the prospect that they were trying to give us. And then a Detroit writer was trying to do a mock package where we would get Ibanez and then their top catching prospect, who's in the MLB top 100. The Tigers have a catching prospect that's got tons of power. And obviously, you know, you can't be too impressed with Connor Wong. The defensive aspect of things are always going to be a concern for him. So I don't know what's going to happen with Abreu, but I guarantee you Craig Breslow's phone is going to be blowing up with calls and texts. What will it take? You guys have a major surplus in your outfield. What will it take to get Abreu? And maybe he's untouchable. I don't know.
He's playing himself into a nice contract. That's for sure. That prospect that you're talking about, is that Theron Lorenzo? I'm just looking it up right now. Is that him? He's number 5 in their pipe. So, and one of them's already actually in there. So really he's number 4, because Jackson Jobe, I'm pretty sure, is already there. Or Jackson Jobe, however they pronounce it. I'm not sure. I believe he's already on the team. I'm actually really curious why they, you know, in that game. So Abreu got the game-winning hit because Bregman was at second base, right? Bregman was at second base. They intentionally walked Casas, who's 0 for the game. So they walked someone who hadn't done anything to face a guy who had been hot. To me, it didn't make any sense. I mean, he'd had their number. He's had everybody's number, it feels like, all season long. So I thought that was just a stupid game playing decision. It was to no benefit. I mean, you're going to try to get someone who's got the power and the ability to get on base. You're praying for a double play ball with Willy Abreu.
It
didn't pass the eye test there. And it just felt like, you know, you have an opportunity to just get out of the inning, and instead you're playing tiddlywinks. And it was a poor decision. Obviously it didn't work out. And I'd probably be saying something different. He'd look like a marvel if he actually did get the double play, but it just, with how that team was doing, and also like the absolute force of what happened in the ninth inning. I mean, you have everyone being super patient, taking walks and whatnot. Why would you intentionally walk someone else? You know, we're on a heater now. So to Abreu's, to your point, Terry, I don't think anybody said, oh yeah, we got to keep Abreu. We definitely were trying to shop him to try to get, you know, Logan Gilbert from Seattle. I think that was one of the names we were kind of flirting with. And then there was the other starting pitcher from Seattle. I can't think of his name. Doesn't walk anybody. Like stupid elite. He's one of their top two guys.
Kirby.
Yeah. Thank you. Kirby. He's the guy that gets actually more heated about walking someone than like happy about striking somebody out. It's kind of like a psychological mind bleep there, but you know, cool if it works for you. Yeah, man. I mean, incredible. Anything else we want to add on those two?
I think we're good. I think so too. I can't wait to see what he does further. And actually, yeah, let's throw one more thing into it.
Sure.
How safe is Sadon Rafaela as an everyday starter? Because you're not taking bats from Duran, and Duran hits lefties okay for a left-handed hitter. Roman Anthony will get called up eventually. That's when it'll all get complicated. None of this gets complicated until Anthony comes up. Anthony also hits lefties very well. In fact, coming into the year throughout the minors, he actually has reverse splits. He hits lefties better than he does righties. So when Anthony comes up and you're hell-bent to hang on to Abreu, I don't know what you do with Rafaela.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Terry. I've got some interesting takes that I'll share on a different spot that I was already thinking. But to give a little bit of a sneak peek, I think it's an interesting question. We're going to have to see what happens with Abreu. Obviously, he's going to cool down. But the question is how much, and can he sustain any level of success, right, and just be an average hitter or an above average hitter, to the point where it forces Rafaela out of this lineup, or even potentially other people, which we'll get into in another point. So
I don't think he's going anywhere right now. I mean, you just gave him a stupid contract. I hear what you're saying, because we still have players that have not played and are coming back from IL. So trying to get people regular opportunities is going to be difficult, but you're not going to take certain bats out of your lineup. You know, it's like, oh, well, maybe he could just be the DH. No, that's not happening. No, you can't put him at third base. That's reserved. Second base reserved. Short until Trevor Story, you know, whatever happens with that, you know, if he goes down, then he still has a spot. So Rafaela has that multi-versatility aspect down. And because of that, I don't think he's going to have an issue. Cause if it's like, oh, we need you to play left for a game or center for a game, short, second, whatever, he's going to be available. So I don't think that's going to be a concern, and I don't think he's concerned either. He'll right the ship. He just needs to really work on his plate discipline in relation to some other youngsters that have pretty much gotten that on lock. So that's that.
Abreu is phenomenal against righties, though. That's what makes it so hard to really want to deal him. I mean, he controls that zone so good. Yeah, he didn't draw any walks, but typically he has. I mean, he's a high on base guy typically. And yeah, I don't know. We'll file it all into the good problem to have category.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The last of our three studs, I'm really happy I get to do this, because I was so disappointed last Sunday night when we were doing this and talking about Rafael Devers, who just couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat. But I mean, talk about a complete resurgence. 7-for-11 in the series, a home run, 6 RBIs, had a pair of doubles, 4 singles. He scored 6 runs, including 4 in the third game. And granted, that was just, you get a run, you get a run, you get a homer, you get a double. Everyone was going off. But what I really liked is the fact that he drew 4 walks, including that clutch one in the 9th inning of the second game. And only had 1 strikeout. So it wasn't like an automatic strikeout every single at bat. And here's the thing. Rafael Devers is not a bad ball player. He's a very smart ball player who is struggling really badly to start the year. But I really believe he has fixed whatever issue it was. I mean, the whole team was rallying behind him. The fans are rallying behind him. 2 multi-hit games here in the series. No complaints. Super happy that he's been able to bring his batting average all the way from 0 to .263. Felt like a far cry that was going to be possible. But yeah, man, he's back here. He's back. So very excited. Terry, why don't you go first?
Throughout his career, he has just, he's imposed his will on players and in certain situations. And I'll admit, I thought it was going to take more time than this to get the ship righted. I knew he would, but I didn't think it would be in week two of the season. I mean, he was just so far off. Just, he couldn't make contact. He couldn't even foul off a 92 mile an hour fastball. Couldn't get the bat on it. So I'm thinking, man, this is, you know, this is going to take a little while. But as soon as he has a fire lit under him, he just goes on a tear. I mean, the first home run of his career, why would that be off a guy like Chapman who throws 102 to 104? Why would that be the first one? You know, he just rose to the occasion in a big spot. Every time Gerrit Cole is in front of him on the mound, Devers crushes him. He just destroys them in Yankee Stadium. And so it shouldn't be a shock that he's already having his resurgence. And he's hitting everything. He's hitting fastballs. He's hitting sinkers. He's hitting off-speed stuff. There's no flaw anymore. There's no hole in his game. Pitchers don't know how to attack him. And it's a good thing. And I had a tweet earlier. I said, Bregman is great, but he'll never be more badass than Devers. I mean, who on this team right now, if we're in a playoff game in a big spot, well, I guess Abreu would be appropriate, you know, given the week. So, but I mean, who are you taking? I'm taking Devers every time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, Terry. In the playoffs, I might take Bregman, but I mean, Devers, I agree with you. I thought this was going to take longer to come out of this, and I think it was a very different situation because we've seen Devers struggle at some points in his career, right? Where he's just, it seems like it's all in his head, or it's his mechanics, or he's injured and he's just battling. But this was different, right? Like, we went from this is my position, third base, to that's I'm playing third, to all of a sudden we're doing what's best for the team. He's kind of in agreement, not really in agreement, and how much of it is mental. And then it started to get to a point where I don't want to say he's trying to not do well, because I don't think that's how Devers is. I think he's a competitor and he wants to win. But how much of it was, I'm reluctant to really do what I can mentally because this is not what I want. And I'm not going to lie, like, that started to creep into the back of my mind. I mean, we talked about it in our chat. I was admittedly starting to get worried about Devers because this was uncharted territory for us. This wasn't an injury. This wasn't he came in out of shape, or although he did come in a little bit out of shape, but this was something we've never dealt with in Devers' career. So I thought it was going to take longer. I was starting to get worried, but coming out of the series, I would agree with Charlie and I would agree with you. I think Devers is back. I'm just sad that obviously the Yankees don't have a certain pitcher that's going to be hitting the mound anytime soon, because I'm sure Devers would be really happy to see him again.
I know Terry's upset about that because that's a good 3-4 home runs that we're not going to get this year. I'm sorry. I can't go against Devers in the playoffs. There's only one guy I want at the plate, regardless of situation, scenario, health. I understand why people would want to go with Bregman, but for me, I'm going to go with the guy that that this team has truly put all their faith in. You know, you spend $300 million. You're definitely, you believe in that player wholeheartedly. And this is our future right here. This is a cornerstone piece, even though he may not be capturing the hot corner right now. This is a vital piece to the team. If he's not, you know, if he's not doing well, the team will suffer. And if he is on it, I mean, do I think we're going to drop 36 runs in a 3-game set again? Probably not. Like, this was insane. That's, I believe, the 18 runs that the Red Sox dropped in Game 3. That's the most runs that anyone's dropped so far against any other team this year. I could be wrong, but 18's a lot. Yeah, so a couple other honorable. Oh, yeah, Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, just Without looking, what do you think Bregman is? What's his postseason batting average? Not that that's the be all and end all, but.
Well, he's done well in the postseason. Like he's had, But are you counting every year, including the year that they had the trash cans?
His whole career.
Batting average 275 career. And that includes that amplified crazy year where he just went off like everybody else, but for the home games. You're going to tell me it's something lower than that, isn't it?
It's 238.
It is 238. Wow. And wow. Just so you know, I mean, the trash can postseason, he wasn't spectacular at all. I mean, in the ALDS, he batted 222. He was far worse in the ALCS against the Yankees at 167 and then hit 233 against the Dodgers in the World Series. So he's had better postseasons or a better series later into his career, into the postseason. Devers, on the other hand, and I bring this up every so often, and this is a small sample size. Bregman's played
99 games.
How many?
And then
99. Yeah. Oh, 99. Yeah. Okay. And Devers only played 26. So yeah. Roughly a quarter of that. So smaller sample size, but Devers is a 303 hitter in the postseason. Did a lot of damage in 2021 as well. 5 home runs in that postseason. But go ahead.
I was gonna say one thing. I realized. So yeah, he's hitting over 326 career games. He's off by 70 or so. Devers has only gotten singles or home runs. He's never had a double or a triple in the postseason.
Wow. Okay.
That's crazy. I mean, you know, someone who's just an absolute banger, you'd think this guy's going to definitely hit a couple of them, not one.
One of his home runs was actually an inside the park home run.
I remember against the Astros in 17.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
That was crazy.
Chris Sale game.
Yeah.
No doubt. And then that's wild.
Last thing on Devers, at the height of his slump, last week, people were saying, I knew we shouldn't have, you know, kept him over Mookie and all that. I'm taking Devers a million times out of a million over Mookie Betts in the postseason. Okay. 100%. Mookie finally have a good one this year, you know, and was pretty productive, but
thank God.
I'm a Devers guy, and I'll point this out one more time too. He's 28 years old. How old was Big Poppy when he came to the Red Sox?
Probably 29, 30.
28 years old.
Because he was 29.
So, yeah. So he's at the same exact point. Now he's playing the same exact position. I'm hardcore pro Devers, and I always have been. So.
Yeah, I'll never forget 2020. Oh, God. Was it 2023? Mookie Betts didn't have a single hit in the postseason.
Yeah. 0 for what? 16 or something like that.
I can't remember. He didn't get a hit. He drew a walk and that was it. I couldn't believe it. It was insane. But this isn't the Mookie Betts show. This is the Bastard show. So we're going to talk about some other studs. Honorable mentions, Jaren Duran, 5 for 16 in the series. Might have been 5 for 17. I have to double check that one. But another incredible series for him. Ended up getting couple of RBIs, stole a base, didn't draw any walks, but that extra base hit happened as well. That was in the third game. That was when basically everyone went off. Bregman, honorable mention as well, went 6 for 13 in this one, had a home run, 7 RBIs. Chris was talking about earlier, 6 RBIs in game 3, had 5 runs. Christian Campbell, I know he only had a couple of hits, still drew 3 walks. So got, you know, on base 5 different times. And I just don't think it's something you can discount. They're talking a lot about Christian Campbell when he got his extension. And I think one thing that I wish that I heard them say wasn't, you know, yeah, like he wasn't a first round pick and he wasn't, like, you're saying all these things that aren't necessarily positive, but what they should have really honed in on was the fact that, yes, we've been working on developing, but this guy's, he works incredibly hard. He was, you know, not even on the planet last year and then very quickly rose the ranks because of his work ethic and dedication. I think that was something that they should have hit on at the beginning. Super deserving of the contract. He's already, you know, starting to pay it forward. It's great. Trevor Story, I'm also putting that on the list. He scored a run in each one of the games, averaged an RBI a game. Obviously, they all came in the first one. He had a home run and three RBIs. Seidon Rafaela had a really good third game, otherwise was 0 for 4. And then I'm actually putting Chapman in this one too. He got the save in game one. He registered the win in game two when we walked it off. So an inning and a third, two walks, two strikeouts. I know Jason is going to talk about the fact that he can, you know, walk the bases loaded and that won't be ugly. But he came in and just got the job done for the first two games. So I'm happy they didn't try to have him pitch in the third game. There was absolutely no need for that. But yeah, man, I mean, there were so many players that went off in the series. Typically, we have three studs and we might have one or two honorable mentions, but I just didn't find it to be very genuine if we didn't shout out all these other guys that also went off in at the very least one of the games. So anything else you guys want to add, either for Duran, Bregman, Campbell, Story, Rafaela, Chapman, or anybody else you guys wanted to shout out?
Yeah, I agree with all of them. I think Chapman is a big one that it's kind of going to fly under the radar, especially with the amount of runs that we scored in this, because we forget, like, that first game shouldn't have been that close. I think it was a 13-9 was the final. Coincidentally, I know we talked very highly about Campbell. I'm super excited about him, but like he made a couple of errors, right? Like he was getting called off by Abreu on that fly ball and didn't let off and then kind of did at the last second, drops in, then tries to turn a double play, takes his eye off the ball for a second. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, bases are loaded. They got the tying runner at the plate, right? And Chapman comes in, of course, you know, like Jason would say, walked the guy, but ends up punching him out. And then today comes in extra innings and strikes two strikeouts and ends up getting the win. And I think about last year's Sox, right? Like those are games we would have lost, right? That one mental breakdown in the field, two, let alone in the same inning, would have been costly. And then to tie it up, get to extra innings, we probably lose that game last year. And those are two games that we end up winning. So as much as I'm not the biggest Chapman fan, I'll give him his flowers.
Yeah. So for Chapman, when he came in for the second game, he struck out Scott. Wynn got around it. He got the walk. Nootbaar ended up flying out to left. And when it came to Páez, he got that first pitch out to get Nootbaar out. Páez was, he couldn't hit anything like high. And that's what Chapman does. When you throw really, really hard, you don't throw low. Usually when it leaves your tips, it ends up sailing. And he ended up striking him out on a pitch that was, I believe it was up and in for strike three. And he got, I think, one generous call. But I mean, yeah, I know Jason's not going to be like super thrilled to hear us say this, but yeah, thank God we have him there, because good Lord, if he wasn't there, I think you're right. I think there's a chance we might've possibly blown one of those two. And instead of being 6-4, we might be 5-5. Terry, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, a couple you didn't mention. Number one, Romy Gonzalez had a big double in the ninth inning of game one, got one of the runs across. Helsley was kind of a mess there. And then interestingly and kind of intriguingly, Carlos Narvaez, we got him. We traded a minor league pitcher to the Yankees to get Narvaez, and the dude's been electric. I mean, he was 2-for-3 in the first game of the series on Friday, walked twice as well, drove in two. I think he hit his first career extra base hit. And then today, 2-for-4 with a walk in the finale. And I don't know much about him. I mean, he's got decent minor league numbers, decent power. I think in time we'll start seeing him go over the monster there. But he only had 6 career starts last year with the Yankees, and wasn't overly impressive, was literally just 3-for-13 in those 6 starts. Seems to draw walks though. So I don't know who he is. I don't know what he is. I don't know what the ceiling is, but I'm intrigued, and when he's in the lineup, I'm going to look forward to it because I want to see what else he does. And good plate discipline as well. There's not much I hate. And if he continues at this clip, Connor Wong might be a backup catcher before long.
Crazy to think about it, that the last piece of the Mookie Betts trade might be a bench piece and that's it. That's just the way the cards went. Anything else you want to add?
I think we about covered it.
Cool. Let's party on over to the duds. This should be fun. Naturally dropping 36 on your opponents here. Terry, who'd you have for your dud?
So my dud will be Ryan Helsley, the closer for the Cardinals. Now, I already mentioned, in my take earlier when I was talking about Dobbins, how, the ninth inning was here. We're down by two. We'd stranded the bases loaded earlier in the game with no outs. It wasn't a good game for us. And here we are against one of the top closers in the game. I think they said he went something like 26 appearances in a row without blowing a save. So that's pretty ominous. And, there's no reason to believe that the Red Sox are going to come back and steal it here. But the dude just could not find the strike zone. Started off with a walk of Trevor Story. Then he walked Willier Abreu. And it wasn't like he was wild, but he just wasn't, for a guy who's trying to paint the corners and the outer edges of the strike zone, he was just a little bit off. So he gives up two walks. Then he gives up, he does get Campbell to line out. Then he gives up the Romy Gonzalez double. Then he walks Connor Wong, strikes out Jaron Duran. And that's the second out of the inning. We're still down by one. Walks Devers after being ahead in the count, two strikes, no walks. Devers battles back to draw the walk. And the Devers walk actually was an RBI because the bases were loaded. Right. And then of course Bregman strikes out, but lots of damage done, lots of batters faced. It was a big spot. It was, like I said, there was no real reason to believe the Red Sox were going to come away, to tie the game there, to take it to the 10th inning. But they did. And, I'm sure Helsley is, looking forward to not coming back to Fenway Park, for the rest of the season
for a while. Yeah. Chris, anything you want to add to, Helsley?
Yeah. I mean, in your words, Terry, I think it's like Helsley was low hanging fruit, but I think about when you keep it in perspective of last year's team. And again, I'm going to bring up last year's team a lot, probably when I'm on this podcast, is like that's the scenario going into that moment. You're thinking everything is against us. The Sox are going to lay down and like, this is a game we were winning 2-1. Whitlock lets them tie it up and then gives up another hit. And all of a sudden now it's 4-2. And that's a game we lose, right? And we're not going to steal it from them. And it's funny. I was watching both broadcasts. I was flipping between the MLB app and I was watching the Cardinals broadcast and our broadcast. And the Carlos broadcast kept being like, oh, he's all over the place. But like to your point, when you really looked at Helsley, like he was just missing on a lot of those pitches. He wasn't really all over the place. He just wasn't getting some calls. And it started to get to him and he kept trying to nibble in the same spots and he just wasn't getting it.
And one guy I did mean to, it was in my notes, Malachi Moore, the home plate umpire, was phenomenal. He had some tough calls. They were all accurate based on the animated strike zone, automated or whatever you want to call it. And, there were even some calls where I was hoping the Red Sox pitcher might get the benefit of the doubt, but he was consistent all game.
He called it consistent for both sides for sure.
Yeah.
And it was tough calls on both sides. But again, we end up drawing all those walks and we fight back and Claw, and we ended up winning. So yeah, it's.
So, I agree. Yeah, I'm going to say this much. I think the plate discipline that the Red Sox showed in the bottom half of that inning was incredible. Helsley did not have his stuff. It's been 3 years since he's been elite, borderline, like best closer in potentially all of baseball. He had fallen off the year after like the 2022 season where he just went postal. And then last year did better. And I don't think that Helsley has like completely lost it and fallen off. But if you look at the at-bat by at-bat, he lost Story on five pitches. He walked Abreu on four straight. And then Campbell, who ended up lining out, he was down 3-1 on him. He just did not have it today. So we stole one from the Cardinals, not because of being over-aggressive. It was actually the opposite of not being aggressive at all. And that worked to our benefit because he just did not have it. And, you know, if you're going to, you know, walk the bases loaded, you know, I'm going to reference Jason again for this one because I know he thinks that Chapman might do it. And it's possible. It wouldn't be the first time he's done it. But it wasn't him who did it this time. And getting into a situation with the bases loaded and one out, not good. When you walk a couple guys and then you give up a double, Terry mentioned it already, really, really clutch. That brought this game within one. And then you walk Connor Wong, who has not been a threat at all this year. Didn't feel like a threat during spring training. Did not feel like a threat at all for the first eight games of the season. And then after him, you've got Duran and Devers. So you have to go after Jaron Duran. He did that. He got him looking at the first one. He fouled off the second one. And then he got him swinging at 100-mile-an-hour heat on the third one. He just was not ready for it. So completely changed up the speeds on him and went up and in too, which didn't help. That's a really hard pitch to try to hit. And when you're down 0-2, not fun. So then you face Devers, who has been on fire after starting off as cold as ice. And Terry talked about it. You have him down 0-2. You cannot lose this guy. You want to throw a waste pitch? Have at it. Two, I don't know. You've been kind of rubbish this appearance. And then you lose them on four straight after that. If you're Devers, you have got to feel so confident right now. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I can't do anything wrong right now. I'm either getting hits or I'm getting walked. So very seldomly do you see a reliever or a pitcher, let alone your closer, who's supposed to be pinpoint accurate, walk more than three guys in a game. Pretty sure it's the first time he's done that in his career. It'll probably be the last. So it just was great that we got to have it against the Red Sox. And it was the fourth game in a row that the Red Sox had won before the blowout in game two today. So, you know, yeah, he's a dud, but it's the goofiest line when you look at it too. Someone that went one inning, allowed two runs on one hit, struck out two, but walked four. I mean, it's just crazy when you think about it. You know, one pitch, you got one strike, this game's over. Go ahead, T.
With the Devers, the very first pitch that he threw to Devers, it was 101.
Yeah.
And it was a strike. And Devers had this look on his face like, oh my God, did you just see that? And I was thinking, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, Devers, you got to have a poker face there. If you make that face on that pitch, guess what you're getting next? And again, yeah. And again. And he was, as we said, with Devers, I mean, he was hitting every type of pitch. He was hitting fastballs, but ideally he wouldn't get just blitzed with nothing but fastballs. I don't think that would be a good thing. But it worked out. The very next pitch was a strike, and then four balls in a row. So, yeah. Helsley, I'll say this, even though he's a dud, he's going to be coveted by, you know, late July, and they'll move him if the right package comes along.
Yeah, I agree, too. I mean, if you have the opportunity, I mean – will the Dodgers get him? Maybe there's a package that they could do to get yet another reliever.
Yeah, he'll be their sixth inning He'll be their sixth.
Exactly. Right. It's just that's a joke. They obviously they don't need it. Although the Dodgers managed to lose another one today. I still think they're the best team in baseball, and it's not even funny. I mean, Blake Snell went down. Like, they lost another starter. Like, people say, oh yeah, for all that money you spend, like, you should be like walking over teams, even without some of their main guns. Like, Shohei still hasn't started. He's not pitching yet. He's doing bullpens right now. There's no rush to get him back. And even if they're 3, 4, 5 games out of first place, which I don't anticipate being the case, I still would not be worried. That's the one team in baseball that has nothing to worry about and always finds a way to plug a hole with something better than it was before. But Helsley will find another home if St. Louis is going to go full out fire sale. And I wouldn't be shocked if that happened. I really wouldn't. Anything else that you guys want to add?
No.
Right on. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me and for all of our dedicated and loyal listeners. We appreciate you. We can't wait to interact with you, and we will catch you on another one soon. Everyone, take care.